And welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, 91.9 FM, KenaiSoul.na. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. Here we are at the end of December for the last show of 2019. We've got a lot of interesting stuff for you this month, so let's just jump right in with this month's beer news. After being on the market for a couple of years, Cassock's Brewery now has new owners, Rick and Michelle McGlasson. Later in the show, we'll have a recorded interview that our own Shaylin Cochran did with new owner Rick. I'd like to take this chance to wish fair winds and following seas to Frank and Deb Cassock in their retirement, and the best of luck to Rick and Michelle in their new venture. After Aurora Productions' cancellation of the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival last month, the beer community in Anchorage went to battle stations to ensure that there would still be a festival in January. In mid-December, it was announced that the new Alaska Craft Beer and Barley Wine Festival would be held on Friday, January 31st and Saturday, February 1st at the Denina Center in Anchorage. Sessions are Friday, 6 to 10 p.m., a connoisseur session from 2 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, and an evening session from 6 to 10 p.m. on Saturday. There will also be live bands and a food garden. Final details, such as pricing, are still to be worked out, but this is still very good news. Bleeding Heart Brewery will be closing its current location on December 31st and will be closed for 2 or 3 months while moving to its new location in downtown Palmer. The new brewery will occupy a portion of the Alaska Picker Building. Bear Paw River Brewing celebrated its 4th anniversary on December 14th with a party at the brewery and the release of its 2019 Old Matanuska-made barrel-aged Russian Imperial Stout. A new homebrew supply shop has opened on the peninsula. Calgon Homebrew Supplies, located at 37202 Ohana Circle in Kenai, is now open. Hours are 12 to 6 p.m. Wednesday through Friday, 11 to 5 on Saturday, and 12 to 5 on Sunday. The store also has a Facebook page. I'll be interviewing the owners later in this show. On January 10th at 6 p.m., Cooper Landing Brewing Company will be hosting a beer release party at the Sunrise Inn in Cooper Landing. Proceeds will support Cooper Landing Emergency Services. Ballast Point Brewing of San Diego, which was purchased a few years ago by Constellation Brands, the importer of beers such as Corona, for $1 billion, has been sold again. This time, the purchaser was a private equity group associated with a small Chicago-area brewery named Kings and Convicts. While the sale price was not released, it was apparently much less than $1 billion. Earlier this year, Constellation took a $108 million impairment charge in adjusting its book valuation of Ballast Point. Over the last few months, Ballast Point has engaged in serious cost-cutting, shutting down its Temecula-based brew pub, as well as its wood-aged beer facility in San Diego, and laying off numerous employees. Alaskan Brewing has released its latest pilot series beer, Imperial Bock. This beer draws inspiration from an old-world beer style. Alaskan Imperial Bock is brewed in the style of an Eisbock, an amped-up version of a German Doppelbock first brewed by 14th-century Bavarian monks during cold winter months, but the brewery's version strays from tradition. Like most winter warmers, Eisbocks are rich in flavor with a pronounced malt sweetness and a warm alcoholic finish. They are traditionally produced by freezing a Doppelbock and removing the ice crystals to intensify flavor and strength. Quote, Alaskan Imperial Bock is based off ice bock, but instead of freezing it, we brewed a higher gravity beer to achieve a higher strength, said Alaskan Brewing head brewer Rob Day. We then rested on vanilla oak chips to help smooth the character that you typically get from a high alcohol bock, explained Day. The result is a sweet, malty beer that doesn't taste heavy, end quote. Imperial Bock is rich, robust, and full-bodied, with cherry notes, toasty overtones, and a mellow vanilla sweetness and a clean finish. Quote, Imperial Bock is a bold, big beer coming in at 12.5% alcohol content by volume, said Alaskan Brewing Communications Manager Andy Klein. Apparently, German friars would sustain themselves on Doppelbock while fasting during Lent. But I'd recommend pairing Imperial Bock with equally rich and hearty foods like venison, pork, or duck, end quote. In homage to the ice bock style, the label features the spotted seal, which inhabits the icy border areas where sea ice mixes with open water on the continental shelf of the Beaufort, Chukchi, and Bering Seas in the Arctic. That's it for this month's beer news. Up next, we'll have Shaylin Cochran's interview with the new owners of Cassock's Brewery.
Hi, this is Sean Owens. Join me on Thursday night from 7 to 9 p.m. for Modern Folk and Roots on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. He can talk like it was yesterday
when I got that holy water in my eye. You've been brewing for like going on 25 years. This is not exactly a new venture.
I guess it has been that long. Started probably back in the mid-90s. Home brewing and ended up going to a beer school down in Woodland, California, the American Brewers Guild down there, and wanted to get into it commercially and start my own brew pub. But the state was kind of young at that time, and they weren't very conducive to brew pubs up here. There wasn't very many, and just didn't work out. So had a young family and didn't have a lot of money at the time, and so here we are 25 years later. So no, it's been a journey, but it's been fun.
But you've got to see this happen firsthand from day one, right?
Yeah, you know, Frank kind of had the same bug I had back then, and you know, his turned into a little more of a reality, and he was able to actually put it all together here, and he's done some fabulous beers out here. Of course, you know, we've won quite a few golds and ribbons up there at the Brew Fest, the Barley Wine Festival, and just over the years, he's just you know, made one after another. You know, he's had his boys working in here, his boy working in here, and he was a great brewer too. So they've done really good, you know, just done really well expanding their product and moving it along as time goes by. And they put in this tasting room as they got bigger. And I remember when they first started, they had a cooler back there that was a Connex, and, you know, and it was kind of archaic, but that's how most of these breweries around kind of get started. You know, they're very small, and they just got things going, and expanded from there, and it's done very well. So
that seems to always be the story about a brewery, is, you know, it was in the kitchen, maybe in the garage if you were really diving into it head first when you started, and then the next thing you know, this,
here they go. And I visited a lot of breweries outside in Oregon, and you know, it's kind of where my roots were, and you know, some of the stuff that the guys were brewing in back in the early 90s is pretty crazy compared to what they're doing today. You know, I remember the guy up in Bird Creek, you know, he brewed in a bunch of old milking stuff. You know, everything he got was from a milk farm, you know, and out there in the Matsu, I think, is where he got it. But he did some fairly good beers there too, you know, and of course he had one that was for the hockey team in town here, so we got to drink that. I think that was one of his best, was right at the end, you know. But it's a fun, I guess, industry, you know, and everybody kind of likes beer, or a lot of people like beer, so they're a bunch of fun. They're a fun crowd to be around.
Let's say it's not a lot of cranks that are.
No, there's no reason to be unhappy when you're drinking a good beer. So
right.
Yeah, so it's really moved on in the state. You know, they got some great breweries up here, and it's fun to just go around and sample.
Was it tough over, you know, the last couple decades? You want to get into this, you got a background in it, and you see the industry slowly over time start to grow in Alaska. Did the itch get a little bit stronger as years went on?
It did. It was hard to just kind of stay out of it, I don't know why we didn't. Maybe fear was probably the biggest factor, you know, as to jumping into it, because it is a big expense. A lot of money for a lot of this equipment and getting it up here, logistics and everything like that. But I guess I always thought I might do it, but I this just worked out. Just kind of fell into us, and you know, we had kind of talked about it a year ago, and maybe a year and a half ago when we first heard they were interested in moving on, and we kind of even put it off then, you know, and it just, like, as time goes on, we're just like, you know, we need to do it. We need to try it. So
started to look for reasons to not do it and not
come
up with any.
Yeah, we weren't coming up with any. So it's good for us. You know, we got a lot of support with our family. You know, I got 3 adult children and 7 grandkids, you know, and I'm sure there's a couple more coming on the way. I hope. You can't have too many grandkids.
Well, and we were joking yesterday, you know, that means we're going to change the taps a little bit, all these grandkids running around.
Yeah, I'm going to need some root beer. So.
I did want to hit again on the idea of, you know, this being kind of a neighborhood spot. That's just kind of what it is. It's a part of the community. People think of Cassex, it's Nikiski, it's the North Road.
Yeah, it is for sure. And we have a great community, great support here. And you know, I think that was one of the big hang-ups with Debbie and Frank is selling it. Is they know this is a real communal place for people to come to, and that's something that they've enjoyed over the years, and they didn't want to see that go away. You know, it was really important to them that it stayed in the community. So that's where we're going to be, and you know, we hope to expand right here and move on. So,
and you mentioned keeping the current crew of 4 on board, and plans for expansion aren't right away or anything major, nothing, no major changes, but things down the road perhaps?
Yeah, we got a great group here. Tim, our I'm going to call him our head brewer, since Frank's going to be out of the position for, you know, the near future, and
the consultant role.
Yeah, he's going to be more exactly. And we're going to use him because he's very good, you know. But Tim's doing a fabulous job. He's been here for 3 years now, and he's starting to come up with his own recipes. And he come up with this new one. I got to say it right. It's cacao nuts, cacao nuts, and which is cocoa. It's coconut in German. And it's a takeoff of a German chocolate cake. So it's got a lot of chocolate in it and some coconut, some nice toasted coconut, and it's really good. And we're going to enter it in the World Beer Cup, and hopefully we can get some recognition for Tim there. He's becoming a new family man, and he's got roots in the area too. So we're just happy that he's going to stay here with us.
Yeah. And is there any style or maybe a recipe that you developed, you know, some time ago that now that you're in the driver's seat, it's like, now it's time?
Well, I'm a big winter ale fan. So Frank, he's touched a little bit, but he's never really hit my sweet spot, other than I like most all of his beers. You know, I mean, they're all a good quality drink. So, but I may try to do that. I may move into trying to throw one of those out there. Of course, I'm going to call Frank and say, hey, any ideas here?
Yeah. So. That's the other cool thing about this being, you know, I mean, I kind of staying in the family to a certain degree. You know, you've been here for a while. You've watched the place grow up, have helped out in the background, and then he's going to be sticking around for a while. So it'll be a smooth transition, I suppose.
Yeah. They're going to be here till through probably the middle of the summer, and we really need their help. You know, kind of make it a smooth transition, and that's kind of where we're at. You know. We're real appreciative that they're going to hang around with us and kind of walk us through a lot of it. There's a lot of regulatory paperwork and the ugly side of brewing.
The business side.
Yeah.
Is there anything, you know, looking ahead, maybe that's it, is just getting all the I's dotted and T's crossed, finishing up all that kind of stuff. Maybe that's the big thing you're looking ahead to, so that you can take a little bit of a breath and go, okay, it's ours. Let's just focus on the beer.
Exactly. And we're hoping to kind of move into the can era, and a lot of the microbreweries have gone to cans, and they seem to travel well, so or a little better than bottles, and maybe a little easier to recycle. So we're going to that's probably going to be our two biggest things, is just finishing up with our licensing and then probably move into that expansion.
But so. I want to get this out there for, you know, diehard fans, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Oh, no. Our beer is going to stay just the way it is. I think we're going to continue to make the good quality beers that we have been making, and that they'll still be on the market. We're not planning on taking anything out of the repertoire, so I guess you would say. The rotation will stay the same, and we'll just add some specialty stuff here and there, and tweak things a little bit here and there. But that's the fun of being a small brewery, is you can do that.
Yeah.
And so it's exciting.
Every year is a good year for jazz. Whether it's the Duke or Ella or someone newer to the scene, you'll find all your jazz favorites on A Good Year for Jazz with your host, Nathan. Each week, travel the calendar back to 1945, 59, or even 2015 to hear what was happening in the world of jazz. I'll meet you right here Monday nights 7 to 9 on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host here, Bill Howell, on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. On this month's feature topic, we're going to talk about cellaring beer. This is the time of year when many breweries, especially here in Alaska, release some of their darkest and strongest brews. Barley wines, Russian Imperial Stouts, winter warmers, this is the season for them. Indeed, for the last quarter century, we've even had a festival in January dedicated to such beers. While there won't be a great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival in 2020, there will be an Alaska Craft Beer and Barley Wine Festival, including a contest for the best barley wine. Given the abundance of strong brews released this time of year, it's not surprising if you might consider saving some of them for the future. Who knows, maybe they might even improve a bit with age? This brings us to this month's topic, cellaring beer. First up, we need to define our terms. Cellaring beer is different than storing beer. The goal of storing beer is to keep it as fresh as possible until you can drink it. In storing beer, you do your best to retard any and all processes that cause beer to change. Cellaring means trying to control those processes so as to produce a desirable change in a beer. The two main enemies of beer freshness are light and heat. So when you store beer, your goal should be to keep it as dark and as cold as possible. Let's start with light and why it's important to protect beer from it. Beer contains hops, and it also contains sulfur. Hops contain alpha acids. When hops are boiled, the alpha acids get isomerized and become chemical compounds known as isohumulones. When light hits the isohumulone compounds, it breaks them down and causes a reaction with the sulfur in the beer that produces some of the same stinky chemicals that skunks spray. Hence the term skunked beer, used to refer to beer that has been damaged by exposure to light. Protection from light is why most beer is sold in amber bottles, even though amber glass will allow some beer-harming rays through. Cans provide complete protection from light. So whether you are storing or cellaring beer, protecting it from exposure to light is very important, as nothing good can come from it. Moving on to temperature, things get a bit more complex. The main concern about a beer's temperature is its impact on the process of oxidation. Most chemical reactions happen faster at higher temperatures, and oxidation in beer is no exception. What happens in that process is quite simple. Oxidation is just the loss of an electron from an oxygen-based molecule to another molecule. The molecule which loses an electron is said to be oxidized. It's when the lost electron transfers to another molecule that things get a little complicated and a whole host of varying flavors and aromas are affected. If we are talking about storing beer, then any and all oxidation is bad. Remember, our goal with storage is to preserve the beer fresh and unchanged as much as possible for as long as possible. That means slowing down the process of oxidation to the maximum extent possible. Therefore, we should try to keep the beer close to the freezing point without actually freezing it. Freezing beer has many other undesirable effects, mainly due to ice crystal formation destroying the beer's proteins. It's for this reason that you'll see most beer coolers set to about 35 degrees Fahrenheit. At that temperature, the beer will keep well without freezing. However, when we are cellaring beer, we are attempting to harness the process of oxidation to promote desired changes in a beer. In this case, we don't want to prevent all oxidation. Instead, we want it to proceed at a slow, controlled rate. Therefore, the ideal temperature to cellar a beer is not as cold as possible, but rather at a temperature below the beer's fermentation temperature. Beers which are cellared are usually ales with a fermentation temperature between 65 degrees Fahrenheit and 70 degrees Fahrenheit, meaning they should be cellared below 65 degrees. If possible, a cellar with a steady temperature of 55 degrees Fahrenheit will produce the best results. Also, it's important that the temperature be kept steady. Large temperature swings are not good for keeping oxidation at the desired rate. Assuming you've located a decent spot to cellar beer, one that you can keep dark and fairly temperature controlled, the next question is, what sort of beers should you cellar? Not all beers are suitable for cellaring. Many styles will not improve but only deteriorate with the passing of time. So, what criteria should you use for choosing a beer to cellar? Well, first, it should have sufficient alcohol by volume. Alcohol acts as a preservative, slowing the unwanted effects of aging and buying time for pleasant, mature flavors to surface. Unless a beer is smoked or sour, its alcohol content should be at least 8% alcohol by volume. Sour and smoked beers are an exception because they have other preservatives, lactic acid and smoke phenols, to take the place of high alcohol content. Beers which are highly hopped make poor candidates for cellaring. Hop flavors and aromas are quite volatile and are typically the first things to be lost as a beer ages, sometimes leaving undesirable flavors behind. For this reason, IPAs and other highly hopped styles make poor candidates for cellaring. Beers which are unpasteurized or bottle conditioned are preferred because the live yeast in the bottle helps them develop and integrate better over time. Bottle beers with their own unfiltered, unpasteurized yeast are a dynamic, living thing, able initially to consume residual oxygen and then continue to slowly condition. Almost all the beers famous for their cellaring potential are bottle conditioned. A bottle size and closure type will also impact how quickly it will age. The larger the bottle, the slower it will cellar. Crown caps provide the best seal against external oxygen introduction, especially if they have been dipped in wax, with corks a close second. Also, unlike wines, corked beers should always be stored vertically in the cellar. Once you take all of these factors into consideration, you can see why the style of beers commonly released at this time of year seem optimum for cellaring. Barley wines and Russian Imperial Stouts certainly have enough alcohol by volume to be cellared, and they are typically bottle conditioned. They are malt-forward styles without much hop flavor or aroma to be lost. Some of them are even smoked, which adds an additional layer of preservation. A final word on cellaring. It's important to keep records. Regardless of how big or small a beer cellar you have, you should have a cellar book in which you can record beers as they go into and are pulled out of your cellar. I personally use a computer spreadsheet, but a simple paper notebook works as well. Since cellaring is an imperfect science, ideally you would purchase multiple bottles of the beer you are aging so that you can sample and evaluate its progress on a regular basis, say every year or 6 months. There's nothing more disheartening than to pay good money for a beer, cellar it for years, and then open it, only to find that it's long past its prime. A cellar book can help you keep track of what you have and when it should be drunk. The internet is also a useful tool in this regard. There are numerous forums where beer aficionados discuss and debate the optimum cellar times for various beers. This can give the novice a good starting point for when he or she should expect a given beer to be ready to drink. Finally, if you're listening to all this and thinking, beer cellaring sure sounds like way too much trouble and effort, I hear you. The good news is that most beer is brewed to be consumed as soon and as fresh as possible. Keep your beers you buy cold and dark, and you'll be in fine shape. But if you've got the interest in the space to establish a beer cellar, you might find it adds another dimension to your craft beer experience. Up next, we'll have a discussion with James Roberts, a.k.a. Dr. Fermento, on the Year in Review.